For the next 12 years, Wilson made his reputation in Texas as the liberal from Lufkin, viewed with suspicion by business interests. He battled for the regulation of utilities and fought for Medicaid, tax exemptions for the elderly, the Equal Rights Amendment, and a minimum wage bill. Footnote. He was often branded with the name Timber Charlie for the legislation he pushed through for the timber interests dominating his district. His political patron was the maverick lumber king Arthur Temple. Temple was not your usual southern robber baron. He was a model of progressive liberalism. His company, Temple Inland, never unionized because he always paid union wages. He personally integrated Dybul, his company town, in the early 1960s. He built the best library for any town its size in Texas. And at a time when federal programs to help the poor were considered anathema, he did what local governments would not. He tapped federal aid to build housing projects, an airport, recreation centers, golf courses, and facilities for the elderly. Arthur Temple helped bankroll Wilson's political career to perpetuate this tradition, as well as to help the timber industry. Historically, the 2nd District congressional seat had been a hard place for a liberal Democrat to seek office. It was an ultra-right-wing political franchise, made famous by Martin Dies, a red-baiting inquisitor who had unapologetically forced child actress Shirley Temple to testify about her supposed knowledge of communists in Hollywood. But fortune knocked when Dies' successor, the incumbent congressman John Dowdy, was caught taking a bribe. Wilson immediately threw himself into the special election, in spite of a recent arrest for drunk driving and its attendant, highly embarrassing mugshot. By that time, he had become something of a legend in Austin as a hellraiser, and his opponent capitalized on this, papering the district with blow-ups of the mugshot of the unmistakably inebriated Wilson and the question, "Do you want this man to represent you in the U.S. Congress?" In spite of this, Charlie won, demonstrating the intuitive understanding of and bond with his Bible Belt constituents that would allow him to hold on to their support through the many scandals that lay ahead. Unlike other politicians, Wilson never tried to hide his failings from his constituents. In fact, he seemed almost to turn his innocent sins to his advantage. Time and again it seemed that the voters of the 2nd Congressional District would forgive him almost anything if he was honest with them. What they hated was hypocrisy, and whatever his shortcomings, Wilson was no hypocrite. There was, perhaps, one other reason why the dour, supposedly puritanical voters chose to make Charlie Wilson their representative. The 2nd District can be a deadly boring place, except when Charlie was there. People couldn't help but like and forgive this boyish politician who always made them feel good whenever he entered a room. During the 1960s and 70s, as he built his political base in East Texas, Wilson could never shake the feeling that he had cheated his country by not giving the 20 years of military service expected of Annapolis men. He had been too young to serve in World War II. He had been at the Naval Academy during Korea. And when it came time for Vietnam, he found himself, as a freshman congressman, reluctantly voting against the war. As he saw it, America's South Vietnamese allies just weren't willing to fight, and for Charlie Wilson, that meant they weren't worth backing. In those days, it was very much in the mainstream for a young liberal Democrat to vote against the war, but it always made him feel a bit like a traitor. Wilson's first serious entry into the arena of U.S. foreign affairs came in his first year in office in 1973, when he discovered the cause of Israel. U.S. ambassadors and assistant secretaries of state, national security advisors, and CIA directors would invariably be puzzled by what prompted Wilson to take up the curious causes he chose to champion. Often they would suspect the basest motives, outright payoffs, or some other ulterior temptation. The real explanation begins with his mother, Wilmoth. Wilmoth Wilson was a woman of conviction. In Trinity, Texas, a conservative southern community, she was the town liberal and a force to be reckoned with. A mainstay of the Democratic Party and a pillar of her church, she stood out as a fearless defender of the rights of Trinity's black citizens. "I suspect ours was the only house in town where the word nigger wasn't used," Charlie remembers. She openly befriended blacks, and throughout the Depression, when hobos and tramps would come to the back door to see if they could sharpen knives in exchange for a meal, Wilmeth would always send Charlie to talk with them, telling him that they were good people just down on their luck. Always, she told her young son and his kid sister, Sharon, who would go on to become chairman of the board of Planned Parenthood, always stand up for the underdog. If you're ever in doubt, back the underdog. As corny as it may sound, the lesson took. It certainly helps to explain why, 2 years before he was elected to Congress, Charlie Wilson was the only person in Lufkin, Texas, who subscribed to the Jerusalem Post. He made this unusual move immediately after reading Exodus, Leon Uris's novel about the founding of the modern state of Israel. It was the ultimate story about worthy underdogs, the kind Wilmeth had taught him to honor. Wilson had been in Congress only a few months and had just won a seat on the Foreign Affairs Committee when Egypt, Syria, Jordan, and the combined forces of the Arab League launched a surprise attack on Israel during the Jewish holiday of Yom Kippur. For a few days, as Wilson followed every news account, he thought the Arab forces might actually overrun the Jewish state. At one point, he became so concerned that he put in a call to the Israeli embassy, asking the switchboard operator to connect him with someone who could brief him about the war. In Washington during those days, the Israeli embassy was a center of remarkably effective intrigue. Its mission was to support the survival of Israel by ensuring the billions in economic and military assistance that the United States gives each year. Jewish congressmen and senators were natural allies and visited regularly. So, too, were elected officials with many Jewish constituents. What made the call from Charlie Wilson to the embassy's congressional liaison officer, Tzvi Rafia, so unusual was that Wilson is not Jewish and had virtually no Jews in his district.